Well, that's an instrument that also has to be installed, and we do install it. I mean, it's a massive affair. This is an organ with over 100 channels of its own loudspeakers, and then the console, which it's an engineering masterpiece, actually built by pipe organ builders, which assembles hydraulically in a matter of minutes, and allows me to have the what is for me the first step and the first most important part of any organ is the psychological ground that it provides for the player. The sense of home and the sense of security that one can never get from cheap plastic keys and little speakers is overcome in an incredibly robust way by the organ that you'll see at Symphony Hall.
Looking away from the instrument for a moment and looking at you, the player, for listeners who haven't gone to YouTube to watch some of your videos, a lot of people talked about your Stars and Stripes Forever video. Mm. You sort of make do what Long Long does, but with your feet.
And thank you.
And you also add, you have how many keyboards?
Five, and there's a sixth keyboard for the feet.
Yeah. How on earth, as a little kid, does somebody start doing their feet like that? How do you become that kind of musician?
Well, I was a dancer until I was about 22, and dance already had a huge influence on how I saw music and thought of music.
I suppose it's a great play on words. There's a physical feat that you pull off with your feet, and I think you must be wearing custom-made shoes, too.
Actually, all organists typically wear specialized shoes of some kind, usually to unify the foot and sort of separate the heel and the toe in terms of tactility. I have customized my shoes.
You kind of do an Elton John thing with your shoes, though, don't you?
Slightly. I mean, my shoes are actually Latin Oxfords, but they seem to have grown Swarovski crystals at some point.
But it enables you to do trills with your feet, right?
That's right, and it's very commonly done actually to do trills for with your feet. I don't think I could say that there's any single technique that I do with my feet that other organists or some other organist doesn't do. I think it's just that I view I guess you could put it this way. My ambition has always been to raise the level of, at least for myself, the level of efficiency and ease of the playing with feet to that of the hands. It's actually basically physically impossible, at least I think for me it is, because of course the muscles involved are much larger. It's really the muscles of the leg that have a lot to do with what happens with the feet, and many of the muscles in the feet are not so much larger than the hands, but it's not as though we're utilizing individual toes either. So for instance, when I play with my feet, with my heels, and the heel is often a pivot or a sort of axis for the rest of the foot, and especially if one note is being held with the heel while other notes, as sometimes happens, are being played by the toes of the same foot, it becomes really a matter of how much energy is going into all the muscles of the leg. And of course, the more muscles are activated, you know, torque applies, and sort of the torque and speed have an inverse relationship. So it can be very hard to play quite as quickly with the feet, but I've always felt that was something that would have to be viewed as key to any really rigorous mastery of the organs, that one would have to have the ability to regard this keyboard that sits on the floor as in fact equal to that of the hands, which is probably why it's so integral to so many of my arrangements. And indeed, the pedal keyboard of the International Touring Organ is the world's largest. It has 10 extra keys, 5 on each side, which has also allowed me to expand the musical palette of the organ in many other directions. And of course, the many, many potentials already offered by the traditional organ pedal board, particularly in counterpoint and having multiple ideas happening at once, are vastly expanded by that.
So you're doing a concerto by Francis Poulenc, with the ASO. And, you know, he was one of those composers who was more modern and had modern perceptions and aesthetics, yet he liked to go back to older instruments that had kind of fallen out of favor, and that's how we get this piece. You want to comment on that?
Yeah, it's interesting with Poulenc because I once asked the composer Lowell Lieberman, whom I have a great deal of respect for, how it could possibly have been that Poulenc was able to get away with, on one hand, still being a member of the musical establishment and one of the important musical figures in France, at a time when music in general was going a very different direction than all of his music, and when Atonality and Stravinsky and Schoenberg and everything was happening, how it could be that Poulenc could still be writing these, you know, some of these little piano pieces, and in fact his piano concerto and the other works that are so tonal, even the Stabat Mater is shockingly straightforward in some ways compared to some of the other works of his contemporaries.
But what's shocking is the juxtaposition of you know, just sort of almost flippant, happy, joyful music, and then he just on a dime he turns and it's just heartaching.
Yes, yeah, that's one of the great things about it, and you get a lot of that in the organ concerto. It's for me a very tempting work to play because it's not written for a full orchestra. It's written for a strings, timpani, and organ, and the indications of what bits of the organ to use and what colors and so on. Were not done by Poulenc. They were done by a contemporary, Marcel Durafray. Maurice Durafray, rather, who was a kind of a contemporary organ composer and is probably still best known for the Durafray Requiem, which has the dubious distinction of having been the only Vichy regime commission to still be sort of performed. Not much talked about either. So I think the first step is to sort of scrape off all of Durafley's indications, which I do, and to use the organ to, at some points, it's almost as though, particularly with the touring organ, the organ is somehow replacing some of the missing orchestral colors. And I think that Poulenc might have liked that too, in some of the ways that there will be a clarinet that appears out of nowhere.
So you have a different idea of how this piece should sound than what's on the page.
Definitely, yeah. Very different.
What are some of those departures?
Well, I do a lot of ornamentation that you wouldn't find under the hands of a traditional organist. And I'm no academic, you know. I think that one of the things that is problematic about music today and also about marketing musical performances is that so much of classical music to the uninitiated ear, which are the ears of my entire family, basically sounds the same. And it's very rare to, we know the great artists who, you know, that we can recognize by hearing only a few notes of their recordings, but they're not very many. And I think it's actually incredibly important now, and probably more important than ever before, that artists identify, you know, and you know, develop signatory approaches and highly characterful identities that can be identified, you know, just by recording without even knowing who's playing. And I've always striven for that in some way. So my music, and I find especially my live performances, are really much more spontaneous, and it's natural for me to play in a way that's much more spontaneously considered than is almost ever done in classical practice. And I think it really often surprises quite classically minded people. Certainly in the orchestra, it's not unusual during the concert for them to be surprised by the fact that I'll probably, as I would imagine I would do, play that concerto three different ways each night.
You seem to be a sort of iconoclastic guy, yet you seem to also have a really good sense of being a crowd pleaser and really dazzling audiences.
Oh, thank you. Well, I just deeply believe that classical music is entertainment, you know. I think it's important to have spontaneity and of course ecstasy. I mean, the reason that I play the organ, and what better instrument for it, really, is that I feel compelled to strive in some way through music to be more than I can be on my own. And I suppose that's probably true of almost any instrumentalist, but something about the organ, I think it's the fact that the energy that actually produces the sound doesn't come from my own body, but it comes from sort of a third source and therefore places me in a different relationship to time because I can hold notes indefinitely. Sort of shifts all the spectrums of life, really, when you're playing it. That, you know, I want to be able to do something so much different with this instrument, and that's one of the reasons that I believe not only more in the digital organ than, of course, in the traditional organ, but also believe that satisfying an audience, even if you're satisfying them by challenging them intensely, is just one of, regardless of whether you consider it an artistic value or defensible artistically, it's one of the things that is incumbent upon you when a person has paid money to hear you play. We'll be right back.